Hello, everyone, and welcome to a special bonus episode of the Filmcast. I am David Chen here with Devendra Hardawar and Jeff Cannata. In this episode, we're going to look back on the films of 2024. We just counted down our top 10 movies of 2024, but what about all the movies that didn't make it into our top 10? What about all the movies that made it into some special categories that we're going to be discussing? We're going to get into it. So I want to mention, first of all, if you are a patron at patreon.com/filmpodcast, you're listening to this episode earlier than everyone else. Don't spoil it for them, please. We'd appreciate that.
But also, thank you for supporting the show.
Thank you.
We are really appreciative. You can find more episodes of this podcast at thefilmcast.com. Email us at /filmcast@gmail.com and become a patron at patreon.com/filmpodcast. Let's get into it, folks.
Also, we should note that by the very nature of this episode, we will be spoiling our own lists from the previous episode.
Great point. Great point. But we will try not to spoil the movies that we mention on this thing. Yeah. But yes.
But if you haven't listened to our top 10
yes.
and you want to be surprised by what's in our top 10, listen to that one first.
Yeah. I mean, I think it'd be weird to listen to this one first, but
sometimes things just start on podcast players.
Some people listen to movie commentaries before they watch the movie,
people are weird.
People
man.
Are strange. You're right, Jeff. Yeah. You're right. So, okay. So let's start with the easiest one of them all. Let's start by talking about what was in our honorable mentions for the year, right?
I have a lot.
What movies didn't make it into your top 10? Let's take turns. All right. So, Jeff, why don't you start? Hit us up with something that didn't make it into your top 10 that you
wanted. Well, I'm going to mention a movie that didn't show up on anybody's list that I thought was worthy of my list and was on my list for a good period of the year.
And you were thinking to yourself, I'm going to leave it off, and surely Devendra and Dave will put it on.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure either of you would put it on, but I just think this movie is awesome. And, it's the strength of this year that there's so many awesome movies that just aren't in my top 10. One of them is a movie called Rebel Ridge.
My list, on my honorable
mentions.
It's a great one.
I really loved this movie, and the way I describe this movie is, what if John Wick, except instead of shooting people in the face, he's just disarming people. He's the unarmed John Wick. It's so good. It's so good. It's so fun. Don Johnson is rad. Rebel Ridge, very nearly in my top 10.
Same.
Great honorable mention.
Same.
It's a great film, yeah, and I fully support it being on anyone's top 10. Here's one that was almost in my top 10. I really wanted to put this in my top 10 just to make a statement, okay? But didn't make it in my top 10. And that movie is Caddo Lake.
Mm. Huh.
This is on Max, the one to watch for HBO. It's unlikely to be on anyone else's top 10, but here's the thing. I wanted to put this in my top 10 because, like other films in my top 10, it does one thing extremely well. Like, the movie is kind of, it's kind of this movie where it's like, when you get to the end, you realize, oh, I see what the movie's trying to do. And then it's cool that the movie attempted that, you know? Here's another movie that I'm going to mention that falls into that category. Predestination, starring Ethan Hawke. Right. I wouldn't say it's like a great movie, but it has one idea that it's trying to accomplish and it succeeds at accomplishing it, and it's like, okay, well, it's no one else is attempting to do that thing. Similarly, no one else is attempting to do what Caddo Lake is trying to do. And it obviously the themes of Caddo Lake are really within my wheelhouse of stuff that I've appreciated on the show in the past. This is a movie that I think has really gone under the radar.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, one of the reasons I didn't put it in my top 10, because I think like most people won't enjoy it. it won't be for most people. And so therefore, the reason
only for the sickos. Yeah.
It's for the sickos. It's for the sickos. I mean, the reason why I want to put a movie in my top 10 is hopefully you will hear us talk about it and be like, oh, I got to go check that out. Right. And I think if I put this movie in my top 10, people would check it out and wonder why it was my top 10,
I'm more amazed at what a shit job they did of just distributing this thing and marketing this thing, because it just kind of appeared, there wasn't much
Straight to Max,
there was normally, even for a thing going straight to Max, there's like, hey, this movie produced by M. Night Shyamalan sounds kind of interesting. I didn't get any of that.
Because you get the emails from the PR people and stuff like that, and you didn't hear anything. Yeah.
From Shyamalan fans. Anybody like the sickos tracking everything he's touching. The Shama heads.
Yeah. Anyway, I was a big fan of Caddo Lake and would recommend it. But again, it's hard to recommend just because I can't tell you what it's about without spoiling it. So
we
like,
really need a For the Sickos category.
Right. I can't tell you what it's about without saying like, oh, if you're into this type of movie, but because I don't want to spoil what that type of movie is. Anyway.
The For the Sickos category is usually Dave's list.
Yeah.
It's usually Dave, just the whole list. Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, I got one.
So, Devendra, hit us up with an honorable mention.
Hitman. I thought Richard Linklater's Hitman was a tremendous film. I know, like, you guys had quibbles with it overall, but I love this one. I thought it had some great performances by Glenn Powell and Adria Arjona. It's a beautiful film. It's a sexy film, really interesting, and just, like, really well-written. I kind of liked where it was going, even though, like, yeah, there are implausible elements. But there's a lot I liked about this movie, even though things get kind of crazy in the end. Like, it's just a fun ride that gets maybe a little crazy serious towards the end, but a lot of fun, like a real fun watch to me. It's a crowd pleaser. And also, it's like Richard Linklater kind of doing his thing. Like, also, characters just talking to each other and having really fun, interesting conversations. It's sexy in a way that we have not seen from many movies, you know, without being something like a Baby Girl, you know? Like, it is just really fun movie that has a really sweet, romantic side to it. Yeah. And occasional killing, you know.
Jeff Cannata, your honorable mentions list. What else is on it?
Alien Romulus.
Yes.
This was also on my list as well. Yeah, I really debated putting it in the top 10. Yeah.
This and Fall Guy were sort of jostling for the same spot. I think Alien Romulus is a home run. I mean, it really, me personally, I haven't enjoyed an Alien universe thing in a while, and this felt like a return to form. It had such cool ideas and concepts in it, awesome set pieces, tense action. Some people will quibble about some of the things that are included that are throwbacks to the first movie. I didn't have a problem with any of it. I had a great time watching Alien Romulus, and I hope it is indicative of a trajectory for the Alien franchise that continues to trend upward.
Mm-hmm. Great choice. Yeah. This is one of the most visually impressive movies of 2024.
Yeah.
Alien Romulus, right? Just looked so convincing in all of its settings, out in space, out on this like mining planet. And there were some really cool sequences, some really creative ways of doing set pieces that I hadn't really seen before. A lot of stuff I had seen before that was painful to watch in this movie, but some of the stuff I hadn't, and that was really, really cool. Anyway.
Yeah.
Alien Romulus, great choice as an honorable mention. So I watched two capital V, capital I, very important movies this last couple days. And I think they're both worthy of mentioning. I'm only mentioning them because I watched them on the same day. But The Seed of the Sacred Fig. And
I really need to see that.
And also No Other Land. So The Seed of the Sacred Fig takes place in Tehran, and it is a fictionalized family drama of like a family going through the massive protests that were happening during 2022 and 2023 that was really violently put down by the repressive regime in Iran. Famously, the director of this movie shot it in secret and had to flee the country because he essentially, you know, broke some of Iran's laws by making this film and is currently still in exile, I believe. This movie won, I think, a special jury prize at the Cannes Film Festival. It's an act of bravery to have made this movie because it's an act of protest to make the film, and he kind of put his life in danger to make it. And I think it's worth checking out. I found it to be, the movie is almost 3 hours long and the pacing does drag in this film. But overall I found it to be quite thrilling and like we see on the news like a glimpse of like protests and, you know, violent clashes between protesters and the state. And this movie, The Seed of the Sacred Fig, takes you into one family and asks, like, how does it impact one family? And I thought that was very, very compelling. I think it's going to be, it's out in theaters right now, and you'll be able to see it hopefully in wider release in 2025. But also, I also watched No Other Land, which was on Devendra's top 10, and found it to be also an act of bravery to make this movie. The people filming this are putting life and limb at risk in order to tell this story of Israeli settlements that are displacing existing residents there, and just capturing some really valuable footage that we generally aren't able to see. Mm-hmm. So I found it to be also super compelling as a documentary. Obviously very different subject matters, but I literally saw both of these movies in the last like 48 hours, and so they're fresh on my mind, and they are both on my honorable mention list. Devendra,
I got stuff. I got stuff. Yeah. Long Legs. I really, really liked Long Legs. And I think part of it was I know like this movie didn't have its fans, but I love the run up to Long Legs and sort of like the marketing chatter around it. I love basically the vibe of it. But the movie itself, too, is like just really hit me in a lot of different ways. I recently rewatched it with my wife, and even at home, you know, in our basement home theater, it still hits. It's still a weird movie with some really interesting texture. It's kind of creepy, but kind of funny at the same time. Great performances by Micah Monroe and Blair Underwood. And that Nicolas Cage
performance. Don't say Nicolas Cage, though.
Well, that Nicolas Cage
He's doing something.
It's something. It yeah. is something. Like, I think there's a lot going on with this movie that is just unique and different. And I had a lot of fun with it. So in terms of like memorable experiences from this year, watching Long Legs was certainly one of them. And yeah, I still think about elements of this movie to this day. Yeah.
Jeff Cannata, any other honorable mentions?
I have quite a few.
I have a few that like, actually all of my honorable mentions have already been mentioned. I'll just say,
okay,
like my other honorable mentions were Conclave, Nickel Boys, mm-hmm. and Furiosa. Mm-hmm.
I have a number that you. I also have Furiosa as an honorable mention. The Brutalist is an honorable mention for me.
Yeah,
it's What's Inside.
Yeah, love it. It's so any ones that haven't been mentioned.
Yeah, I have a couple that I think you guys would never mention.
Yeah,
I'm waiting for that Borderlands drop, Jeff. Yeah, what? I'm waiting for it.
Yeah. Borderlands.
Yeah, no. Where's Borderlands, Jeff?
No,
Borderlands. Saturday Night is a movie that I had a blast with, and you know. I know that everybody didn't love it. I thought it, I'm a huge fan of Saturday Night Live, and seeing sort of a backstage, even if it's not entirely accurate and is more of a, you know, watching people do impressions, but it was kind of what Saturday Night Live is too. I really enjoyed that movie, and I love its pace and its kineticism. The way the camera moves in it is really fun. How it's encapsulates the sort of energy of the first season of Saturday Night Live in one night, in one, you know, almost in real time. It's a blast. I really enjoyed that movie, and I think it's kind of getting underappreciated on the whole.
You know, I am not a fan of the themes of this film or mm-hmm. the message of this film, but I actually do think it's exceptionally well made. Like, I think it's a really, really well made film, and like you said, kinetic, propulsive, like you really feel like you're on the edge of your seat wanting to see if they can pull this off. And so I think it's a really solid choice, but it's just obviously did not speak to me personally.
Mm-hmm. The other one that I know you guys won't agree with, but I, you know.
Borderlands.
I could see this movie being in my top 10. It's Here. Robert Zemeckis's film that
I was waiting for you to make that your number one, Jeff. Like, I really? Would put money on you would put it somewhere around there.
I mean, there is a category that you may see it show up in later, but I just love the audacity of this movie, and that it works, that it actually moved me and made me think, Does it have flaws? Absolutely, it has flaws. You know, is he succumbing to some of, you know, Zemeckis in this case, succumbing to some of his, you know, less successful tendencies? Yes.
All.
But you know what?
Yes.
I think it's such a cool idea, and the execution is awesome in so many respects, and it works, and I was moved by it. I was, as somebody who is a homeowner and, you know, is reaching this place in my life where I'm thinking about, my family and what the next generation is going to inherit from me, and those, like, all that stuff is in this movie in really palpable ways. I love here, and I think it bums me out that so many people just rejected it out of hand because of kind of the gimmick of it. I think it's worth watching. It's a really interesting movie.
Great pick as an honorable mention, Jeff.
I love we're in the choices of movies we liked, and screw you guys for not liking it. That's right, where we are right now. So in that vein,
yeah, Devendra,
I'm gonna throw out there A Quiet Place Day One, which I thought was an incredibly well-made prequel. Michael Cernowski is out here making unexpected movies, right? You hear the premise for Pig and you kind of think what this movie is going to be. It's Nicolas Cage on a revenge spree about his stolen pig. Not quite that movie. And Quiet Place Day One does do some of the formulaic prequel stuff, but it is not that. Like, I was shocked, like, watching this, like, how much this is a very emotional film about somebody coming to terms with their own death. Like, with their impending death and kind of what that means. And, oh, yeah, A Quiet Place is happening all around it. It really, to me, it balanced a lot of those things really well. I also rewatched this with my wife lately, too, and she loved it. I think this is one of those Lupita Nyong'o performances where she does a lot here. Like, she is giving her all to this movie, and I think it was mostly dismissed as, like, you know, prequel dreck. But, hey, I'll take a well-made prequel and, you know, shout it up when I can. So I love this movie.
I think this is a really solidly made film, but also in honor of Jeff Cannata, I wrote up a list at decodingeverything.com this weekend that was dubious movie awards for 2024. And I listed A Quiet Place Day One,
The Cat,
as a movie that most did not live up to its premise.
It's turned off.
What I mean by that is it is a great Quiet Place adventure. Like, if you're into Quiet Place, you will be satisfied by this film.
By premise, you mean title.
Not even title, but also, okay, like, what is committed to in the marketing, right? So literally, because I've seen that trailer, I'm going to guess approximately 76 times.
Yes.
And every single time it's like, find out how the world went quiet. And so you think, oh, we're going to find out how we dealt with the world going quiet. Nope. In the opening scene of the movie, Lupita Nyong'o's knocked unconscious. And then when she wakes up, everyone's already figured out the Quiet Place thing. Like, everyone's
what I find dubious is the dubiousness of this this awards.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, basically. Absolutely.
No, because to me, marketing should not dictate, like, you know, what you ultimately value.
Well, also the title, Devendra. Yes. It's not the title.
Oh, the title? Oh, man. Yeah.
Oh, it does. So the title should not set some expectations to me?
They had to call it A Quiet Place something, and, like, yeah,
if they
understand.
Called it New York City, A Quiet Place Adventure, I'd be like, sure, that's fine. A Quiet Place Saga, that's fine. You know, like,
A Quiet Place Saga.
No problem with that. That is another choice for Devendra's honorable mention. It's actually an enjoyable film, I think. But
it's a great film.
But yes, in my opinion, does not live up to its premise. We're going to take a break for a sponsor, and then we'll be back with more honorable mentions right after this.
This episode of the Filmcast is brought to you by Doer. Doer. Hey, I don't have a real job. When I'm working, I usually wearing pants at all is a stretch. I'm usually wearing sweats or something, you know, something I fell out of bed and fell into. I'm not exactly a fashion icon, but Doer sent over their new Stretch Canvas 7-pocket pants, and they are pretty darn cool. I got to tell you, you look good, you feel good, and no matter what you're doing throughout the day, the Doer Stretch Canvas 7-pocket pants got you covered. Doer creates performance denim and lifestyle apparel that is made for doing, hence the name Doer. And these new stretch canvas pants are the future of utility wear, made for the creative doers of the world, like you and me. Whether you're a director, photographer, chef, clothing designer, anything, these were made with you in mind. These stretch canvas pants have stretch fibers for comfort and ease of movement, a special treatment for weather protection, and back and thigh pockets for extra utility and storage. Can I tell you, when I plopped these bad boys on this holiday season, I put them on because I had to build some of my children's presents. That's right, Santa doesn't always deliver things fully assembled. And these Doer Performance Denim Stretch Canvas 7-Pocket Pants were perfect for that. I could put stuff in tools and pockets, and then when I was done building, I didn't have to change into something else to look nice. They're Doer pants. They make you feel good. You look good. They're stylish, and they're also super functional. Plus, I also got a button-up shirt that I've been wearing, oh, that I love. It comes in this really cool desert sand color. I use it as a over the top of a t-shirt, unbuttoned. Looks great. Button it all the way up. Looks even better. Trust me, it's time to upgrade your work uniform with these stretch canvas pants from Doer. Order yours today. Check out Doer's flagship stores in LA or Denver, or order now at shopdoer.com/filmcast. When you use our exclusive URL, which you should do today, you'll get 20% off your first purchase. Go to shopdoer.com/filmcast, F-I-L-M-C-A-S-T. This is an awesome deal. Don't wait. To get 20% off, go now to shopdoer.com/filmcast.
All right, go ahead, Jeff.
I was going to say there's one I was surprised neither of you mentioned. I had it as an honorable mention, but I really thought you guys were going to mention it, and it's Nosferatu.
It's on my honorable entrance too.
Could have been on there. Could have been on there.
Particularly Devendra would have.
Loved Nosferatu, yeah, but I also too. Had locked in a lot of my lists before I saw this, so you know,
yeah,
it's just one of those things.
Yeah, but yeah, that's a great film as well.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else in the honorable mentions that didn't quite make the top 10, guys?
I mean, I recommended His Three Daughters to you, Jeff, and I really think you'd like that movie.
I want to watch that. Yeah.
It is, you know, that's Azazel Jacobs. It's a movie co-starring Carrie Coon, Natasha Lyonne, and Elizabeth Olsen about three, like, remote sisters kind of dealing with their father's impending death. And it's fantastic. Just also a great New York movie, too, even though it never really leaves that apartment. It gets a sort of claustrophobic vibes of living in a big New York apartment. Yeah.
Are there any movies that you guys really wish you had seen but weren't able to see?
So many.
I know, like, Sing Sing was on your list. Like, oh, I wish I had seen that.
Yeah.
I wish I had seen Do Not Expect Too Much from the End of the World.
Yes, I'm looking at that right now in my list of things to watch.
Yeah. Going to try to check that out.
Union, the one about the Amazon Union, that documentary I hear was really good, and I didn't get to see that.
There was a movie that was suggested to me by Stephen David Miller called Green Border? Yeah.
Green Border. Yeah.
Green Border, I've heard, is really, really good. I'm hoping to check that movie out as well. Devendra, I was surprised The Substance was not on your top 10 at all.
Did you recall me saying I thought that was a movie? Did you recall that whole interaction? I did not like The Substance very much.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. All right.
There are people who love The Substance, and then there are people who don't. And I've not seen like much middle ground in that movie. I think some tremendous performances, like Demi Moore is incredible in it. But that is a movie about its muchness, and it doesn't know when to just like let a thing linger. Like, it is always shouting at you. And I think I've learned from that movie specifically and a lot of other things, if you're just shouting, like, you're not giving me time to process. You're not like letting things linger in a way that I appreciate. So it is, I respect it for what it is. It is doing some really interesting things. And the physical effects work in that movie is also kind of fascinating, but Yeah, the praise for that movie, that is one of those things, you know, in our other categories, movies we didn't get. Yeah.
I have a couple other ones that haven't been mentioned yet. One is Night Bitch, which I think is not a movie that would ever have made my top 10, but it's certainly a movie that has stuck with me and I think about a lot. And as I said during when I talked about it and what we've been watching, feels like mandatory for people thinking about having kids. It's just like, it's so, so unflinching in its, in its bleakness. The other one is A Real Pain.
Yeah, great, great movie.
Which
great
is movie. Just a lovely movie, and I think we'll probably get a lot of attention in awards time.
Yeah,
and deservedly so. But hey, the biggest surprise for me, the one I thought I would put money on being on Dave Chen's list,
yeah,
is Wicked.
It's true.
Yeah, you know, well, people are putting Wicked up there. I really thought about it, and.
I could have seen that being your number one.
That's what I thought was going to be your number one.
Yep.
I'm going to put this out there. This what I'm about to say could discredit me, and that's fine. But I guess I just
it's not a complete story.
You never had any credit.
Well, I think I just felt like I had a blast with Wicked. I really enjoyed watching it, and I would highly recommend it. But I think I was just like, you know what, Wicked has got enough praise. You know, that's kind of how I felt. I was
that's
like,
how I felt about I feel Deadpool like a lot of... and Wolverine.
Yeah, right,
it doesn't need to be on my list.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be on the list. It's like, it's already the people that are, you know, so it's like, now you might question, oh, well, then is it really an objective ranking of your top 10? It's like, not really. You know,
it's your list. You can do whatever you want.
I can do whatever
why
I want.
D2 is not on my list. Yeah.
If I want to highlight Red Rooms instead of Wicked, it's like, yes. I think that will ultimately be better for society.
Yeah.
If I highlight Red Rooms, a movie that very few people have seen, versus Wicked, you know what I'm saying? So like, yeah, I really did love Wicked. But also, I'm going to put this out there too, Jeff. As time has gone on, the fact that it's Wicked Part 1 really does irritate me. Like, the fact that they do not advertise that it is Wicked Part 1, they just call it Wicked, and then Part 1 slaps you in the face like 20 minutes into the film.
Yeah.
It
really,
really
is a transgression that cannot stand.
It really does grind my gears. I'm being 100% genuine. Like,
yeah.
And then so maybe like Wicked, when Part 2 comes out, it'll be like, I'll put that on my top 10 as like an acknowledgement of the entirety of the film.
This is a Return of the King situation.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. Also, don't listen to to me putting Dune Part 1 on my list like 3 years ago, because that's wildly inconsistent with what I just said. But anyway, the thing is, Wicked is such a it is a cultural phenomenon. Right now, right? I'm seeing memes, I'm seeing there's just the love for it is it's like super mainstream right now.
I went to we surprised the kids with a trip to Universal Studios Hollywood for Christmas. Santa brought tickets to the park. And
nice.
Universal Studios Hollywood is all over Wicked. I mean, Wicked is I can't believe there's not already a ride, but the park is Wicked, splattered with Wicked all over the place. I mean, this is a park with Harry Potter Land and Nintendo Land, but Wicked has a major, major presence at that park.
Yeah.
I was surprised.
Yeah. It's a big deal. It's a big deal.
What is going to be the Wicked ride at Universal Studios?
You ride a broom. You're defying
broom.
Gravity.
You're defying gravity.
You're defying gravity.
Exactly. Yeah.
You walk into a room and find out your government is entirely a lie. And, you know.
I think it should just be that library with the rotating bookshelf.
Yes, I love the library.
You're just on that.
Look at that library.
Yeah. But yeah, Jeff, I did strongly consider, because it is, in terms of like enjoyment, that I got at the theater this year, it would be my top 10 like movies that I enjoyed this year.
If I hadn't had to guess your number one, that's what I would have guessed.
Yeah. I mean, I did really enjoy it, you know?
Yeah. It's fine. I thought it was great to see Red Rooms on your top 10.
Yeah.
Dave. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Red Rooms and like Skywalker. These are movies that I just don't feel like people have seen.
Nobody is talking about Red Rooms. And that is a really, really incredible film.
Yeah. We talk about that all the time. The function of a top 10 list. Yeah. Sometimes you just want to champion underappreciated movies.
Yeah.
And I think that's a completely legitimate goal.
Yeah, and it's not like I didn't enjoy those movies, you know, but it's like, it's a different the enjoyment I got out of Red Rooms is very different than the enjoyment I got out of Wicked, right? It's like the flavor of enjoyment.
The same movie, right?
Very much. Actually.
You know, in one, I'm like exuberant, like, oh, song and dance truly has the ability to try. And in Red Rooms, it's like, wow, what an incisive look at the dark web. You know, like, these are very different feelings. And it's like, how do you rank them against each other? There's no objective way to do that. And so sometimes the thing that swings it is, hey, I think more people should watch this thing.
Right? I think the way I judge things goes back to like the way Roger Ebert used to do it, which is sometimes like, I like this movie. You know, it may not be the biggest thing I saw this year, but I think you as an audience, as my reader, should check it out too. And I've discovered a lot of things because of that.
Any other honorable mentions or things you thought would be on our list? I am a bit surprised Challengers wasn't on Devendra's list as well.
I mean, listen, I love Challengers a lot. Yeah. I love Challengers. It had a lot of like buzz early on. I love that movie. And it's basically, it's on my honorable mentions. But yeah, really, again, it was tough. Like when I listed the movies I love this year, I hit 20. I was like, what am I going to do with this?
Yeah. I think Anora, the only movie that was on all three of our lists. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
So if we had to go for film cast determination of best picture, it's the one with
it was ranked choice voting.
Yeah.
The only Venn diagram movie of the year. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I already said this, but I think for me, the biggest shock that's not on Devendra's list is Nosferatu. I thought for sure I would put money on the fact that movie would be.
I'm going to say, I think, this is one of the reasons I really took it. Like in the past, I have really tried to cram in all the movies in December. And this, like in the last couple of years, I've just decided that's pointless because I think the problem is it's really difficult to watch a movie and then decide in quick, like within a couple of days, this is going to be my top 10. Now, for me, I actually did see a movie that for which that was true. That's Red Rooms. But in general, it's really difficult to do that. It's just because you need to think about it. You need to like marinate on the film.
I guess that's true. And I also think that sometimes at the end of the year, you're watching something specifically to decide if it's going to be in your top 10, which is kind of an impossible bar for a movie to clear. It's like, that's kind of unfair to the movie, but
yeah.
You know,
Here's a movie that almost also made, actually, I forgot to mention this one. This was also an honorable mention for me, almost made it into my top 10. And that is Smile 2.
Really?
This is a weird one. Did either of you see Smile 2?
I have not seen it yet.
It's on Paramount Plus right now, I think. And it's one of those movies where Naomi Scott, she plays the main character, Sky Riley. It is such a bold performance. You know, we talked about Lily Rose Depp in Nosferatu and how she just left it all on the field in that performance. And that's how I feel about Naomi Scott's performance in Smile 2. It's like one of the most, like you're watching this character mentally disintegrate in front of your eyes. And the way she does it is so bold and powerful. I was a huge fan. Also, of the two movies this year that featured a fictional artist, performing in a horror film, Sky Riley was my favorite over Lady Raven in Trap. But yeah, they created a fictional artist for this movie. You see part of her concert and you see kind of like the soundtrack has like songs that she's written and all this stuff like that. I was a big fan of a lot of what Smile 2 did. It's also one of those movies where the first movie is like a really stripped down, simple version of this concept. And then the sequel is like, what if we had an additional $15 million to like make this movie? And it is more ambitious. Its set pieces or its sequences are more bold and striking. Just a great evolution.
The X2 to Smiles X1.
Yeah. So that's one that was like, oh, I really, really debated it. But I think ultimately it's a little too niche to be on the top 10.
I mean,
but
that was a pretty widespread, I don't know, release.
Yeah. It made $138 million at the box office. Like, it was a big success. I'm pretty sure we're going to see a Smile 3. It's just overall just like a successful thing where the director took a movie that was supposed to go straight to streaming. It got released. It made like $100 million. And then he was given the resources to make another one. He made another one. It was also good and featured this like incredible performance by Naomi Scott. Big fan of Smile 2 and almost made my top 10.
Now that you mentioned Trap, by the way, like Trap would have been, that's on my honorable mentions. Like just in terms of like Shyamalan doing his thing. Yeah. I don't care about plausibility. I don't care about like, this construction just feels a little false and forced or something. It is him like constructing a thriller in like a really clockwork manner. And it's a little unbelievable. It's a lot unbelievable. But Josh Hartnett really sold it. Like the whole idea of like the meme of the year for me was like, oh, this is a trap. We're going to
Trap. That was a good meme. Good meme.
It's a good meme.
I'm just a fan of the fact that he's doing stuff with his kids.
Doing his own
like,
thing.
It's so cool. It's actually legit heartwarming to me that he's like, hey, we're going to. You know, his daughter has written about how, oh, yeah, we made a movie. I like sang and performed some songs. My dad directed it. You know, it's like it's hashtag Asian family goals.
Also hashtag control your own Hollywood nepotism. You know, like help your daughter make her movie. Help your daughter with her movie career. What a dad.
Lots more to discuss right here on the Filmcast. We're going to take a break. For a sponsor, we'll be back with more special categories looking back on the films of 2024 right after this.
This episode of the Filmcast is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing so your money has a chance to grow for you, for your kids, and your retirement. Hey, we all have been making New Year's resolutions. I know I have. New Year's resolutions can be hard. Everybody wants to go to the gym more or eat better or read a book. Man, those are all great. But then, hey, when you're trying to get out of bed and it's pitch black every morning, it's hard. It's hard to go to the gym. When you're staring at your fridge, you don't want to eat that stuff. Hopefully you're still reading a book. But what if you could make your resolutions automatic? Yeah, you know, I can't help you with the gym part or the eating right part or even the book part. I wish you could. But Acorns makes it easy to start saving and investing automatically. That's right. You don't have to be an expert. Acorns will recommend a diversified portfolio that fits you and your money goals. And you don't need to be rich. Acorns lets you invest with the spare money you've got right now. You can start with $5 or even just your spare change. You don't need a ton of time. You can create your Acorns account and start investing in just 5 minutes. Make good on that resolution to be better with money. Head to acorns.com/filmcast or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/filmcast.
Okay, folks, it's time to get to special categories. I want to give a shout-out to the now-defunct Film Spotting SVU podcast, which inspired many of these categories. But every year, we run down some of these categories for the movies of 2024. You'll understand what they are as we go through them. Let's start with most disappointing film of 2024. Most disappointing film of 2024. Yep. I'll begin. I think I got to put out Gladiator 2.
Wow.
Most disappointing film of 2024. Huh. In the sense that Gladiator 1, incredible movie, iconic performance by Russell Crowe, a movie that was both popular and also critically acclaimed, won a bunch of Oscars. And after decades, hey, it's Ridley Scott coming back to the director's chair, Gladiator 2. But this movie falls down for a couple of huge reasons. First of all, Paul Mescal, talented actor, does not live up to what Russell Crowe is able to accomplish. And that wouldn't necessarily be a problem, except this movie keeps bringing up Russell Crowe every 5 minutes. It is obsessed with what has come before, and that's a big problem when this movie is not as good as the first one. There is way too much plot in this film. You have, in my opinion, Pedro Pascal basically doesn't need to be in the movie. Like, I don't even know what he's doing in this film.
Mm-hmm.
The one bright spot in Gladiator 2 is Denzel Washington, who it's fun to see Denzel Washington having a blast in this film, but other than that, this movie was not great. It was kind of a remix of the first film. Some great action scenes, but the plot made absolutely zero emotional impact whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Very, very disappointing. So I thought Gladiator 2 had a chance to be awesome, and instead it was merely acceptable. That's why it's my most disappointing film of 2024. Jeff Cannata, your most disappointing film of 2024.
I think if you went back to the audio of this episode last year and we talked about our most anticipated movies, I think I mentioned this one, and it, while not,
I actually had the clip. I actually had the clip. Do you want me to play the clip? Because I was going to play it later on when we did our favorite film.
Sure. If you want.
Yeah, okay. So last year, we listed what we thought would be our favorite films of 2024 at the beginning of 2024.
Okay.
And this is what Jeff said, and I didn't have time to like make a harp noise, so I'm going to do the harp noise verbally, right? So so you know when this clip begins and ends. So here's the clip. I'm going to play it starting now. Play clip.
So just to be clear, if you're going to play the clip next year, my choice is Furiosa. But okay. But I think that has the best chance of actually making my top 10.
But off the record.
But off the record, the one that I'm most hopeful, hopeful, is phenomenal and I love and will make my top 10 is Beetlejuice 2.
Oh, Jeff.
Wow.
Oh, Jeff. All right.
That's
a swing.
I love Beetlejuice.
Yeah. I mean, I love Beetlejuice 2.
I want it to be great. I think the odds are not in its favor that it will be on my top 10, but I want it to be so worthy of bringing all those people back and doing it again.
We're back in the main episode. Now, I want to say the reason for that reaction at the beginning about Furiosa is because when we were getting to the part where we're listing our favorite films of 2024 in last year's episode, Jeff was like, look, we all know you guys are going to pick Furiosa. And I was like, oh, wow, Jeff, really kind of presumptuous there. And also Jeff, like, not even recognizing that Furiosa was on his own list. So that's why he starts off by saying, obviously, the clip is going to be Furiosa. And Furiosa did make Devendra's top 10 and was on our honorable mentions this year.
Yeah.
Very solid movie.
Could have easily made my top 10.
Could have easily made top 10, agreed. But yes, Beetlejuice, Jeff, was your
biggest disappointment. My biggest disappointment is Beetlejuice, which at that point, I didn't even know the title. But the title is a home run.
Yeah.
The title is amazing. And again, not a movie I despise. It's not a movie I hated. It just is a mess, in my opinion, and a waste of assembling all those people back together, and could have been so much better than it is. And I had super high hopes. So yeah, Beetlejuice is my biggest disappointment for 2024.
Devendra Hardwar, your biggest disappointment of 2024.
Yeah, my biggest disappointment. I kind of I'm with you, both of you guys. Although I'd say for Gladiator 2, I just didn't really expect much, you know, given release recent output or whatever. The thing that has had decades of buildup for me and thought and ideas about like what it could be is Megalopolis.
Yeah.
And for many, many years, I've heard about this crazy Francis Ford Coppola project where he was putting his own money. He had these wild dreams and ambitions for it. And I know some people love this movie. I don't think it's I don't know. It's not a good movie. There are some really great scenes and really fun performances and things you can meme from it. But it is such a mishmash and a mess of so many different things. And wild to me how we see something like this and then like the Brutalist like comes in and kind of does a very similar thing, but better and more subdued, and I think, and more detailed and rich. Megalopolis, I wanted to love this movie so much, and it ended up just being something I was laughing at most of the time. It was kind of fun to see in theaters. I saw it with my brother, but what a ride. I just can't help but think like what it could have been if there was a better writer involved and a little more like structure to it or something.
It was memorable.
Memorable. Yeah.
It is remarkable that we got two movies about architects this year. The one that was made by the, you know, how old is Brady Corbett?
Master of Cinema.
One that made by the Master of Cinema, one made by Brady Corbett, who's 36 years old.
Man.
And, you know, he made the far better film. It's remarkable. Also, gotta say, Megalopolis, definitely the wrong film for our time, right? Francis Ford Coppola made a movie that says, hey, the guy who thinks he's a genius and is wealthy and should have more power, we should give him more power.
Just give him whatever he asks for.
Yeah, give him whatever he asks for. Like, the reason society is failing is because the rich people who think they're smart don't have enough power. That's what the thesis of that movie is.
We're going to get to find out how that all plays out.
Yeah. Thankfully, we're going to find out whether or not Francis Ford Coppola is right. But I have a suspicion about what the true answer is.
It's
very disappointing that the movie was not only terrible, but also had a message that I think was, it came out at the wrong moment in our society. So I would agree. This is almost my most disappointing film of 2024 as well. Okay. Let's do this before we take one final break. Let's talk about favorite piece of non-movie entertainment in 2024. This is a relatively new category we have. Favorite piece of non-movie entertainment in 2024. Devendra, why don't you start us off?
Sure. The thing I couldn't stop thinking about this year is Shogun, the FX series.
Also on my list. This is my choice for this category as well.
It's a tremendous show.
It's a masterpiece. It's like one of the greatest shows that's ever been made.
I think we're going to say the same things, but I think it is, it is a masterpiece, incredibly well written. I have not seen the original series, but I kind of have, what I've heard is the criticisms of the original series and kind of the idea of Shogun in general. So what is remarkable about this show is that they kind of took it and kind of owned it in a different way. Like, there is more support from actual Japanese actors. Like,
three quarters of the movie or of the show is in Japanese. It's not in English.
It's basically representing a time where we're like, yes, people read subtitles now. It's okay. You can deal with that. But I also love that Hiroyuki Sanada like was able to sway a lot of this production and get those things like actual Japanese actors and make this whole project more authentic and not just like a weird, Western romantic story about a white dude in Japan. It's about a lot more than that. And I thought that was fascinating. The performances across the board, like, I'm sure Anna Sawai, I thought she was great even before the show, but she is remarkable as Mariko in this. It's something I can't stop thinking about. I'm glad we're going to get a season two. And yeah,
I'm pretty worried about season two, honestly, they've already made one of the greatest shows of all time. Like, it's really hard to follow that up. I'm going to put this out there. It's a tragedy that Jeff Kanata has not seen this yet.
And I gotta watch it.
The reason is because it's everything Jeff Kanata wants in entertainment, in the sense that it is about how words are more powerful than the sword, right? It's about how words and honor, like, these are more powerful concepts than brute force. Mm-hmm. And also the way in which it handles translation is amazing. Like, the idea is, by the way, there's this character played by Anna Sawai who is the translator between like a Spaniard. Is he Spaniard or is he Portuguese? I forget. He's Portuguese, I think.
Anyway, Portuguese.
Portuguese, yeah. Right. A Portuguese a sailor and all these Japanese people. And there is this other layer of storytelling where she's not necessarily translating him word for word, right? And so you're seeing kind of her own personality come through in the translation, and that is just like a really cool storytelling device that we just don't see on TV or in general. So many cool things to love.
So many cool. Cosmo Jarvis delivering the best Tom Hardy performance of the year too.
I would say he does a great Logan Marshall Green impression.
who is a lesser Tom Hardy. This is like three levels down.
Tom Hardy. He's second tier Tom Hardy. Or actually third tier Tom Hardy. Logan Marshall Green is second tier Tom Hardy. I literally was just watching Upgrade last night, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really fun movie. Logan Marshall Green is awesome in it because he needs to portray a character who is being completely badass and, you know, chopping people's heads off and cutting people and whatever. And also look surprised as he's doing it because something is control of his body. Anyway. What's funny is
when that movie was coming out, there were also trailers for Venom. So we had two guys who looked exactly the same. Like, oh my God, these powers.
It's the same concept. Yeah. Anyway, Cosmo Jarvis, completely different dude than Tom Hardy and Logan Marshall Green, looks similar, same energy, does a great job in Shogun, which is streaming right now on Hulu/FX. So Jeff Cannata, this has got to be on your must watch list.
I got to get to Shogun. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We were just talking about best favorite piece of non-movie entertainment for 2024. Jeff Cannata.
This is the hardest category for me. I had such a hard time narrowing it down to one. I think there's been so much great TV this year that I've really loved. I honestly think, you say non-movie entertainment, it might be Batman Arkham Shadow, but I have a whole...
More than the Indiana Jones game, Jeff?
I have a whole video game podcast where I rated that higher than the Indiana Jones game, so I have to stick with that.
Okay, okay.
And you can hear me talk about that there, so there's
I
no reason
to... I think lists can change over time, but yes.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, over the time, it's a week ago.
Yeah. They can change in a week, in my opinion, but yeah.
But... I'm inclined to say, and you guys are going to laugh at this, I'm inclined to say Dark Matter.
Really?
I had such a blast with that show.
I actually think that show is awesome. Like, I really love that show as well. Yeah.
I don't think it's literally the best thing. It takes a while to get going. Like I said, it took me two tries. The first couple episodes, I was like, this show sucks. But it's kind of giving you a feint at the beginning. It's pretending to be something much more simplistic than it turns out to be. And I just thought that show was rad. And it really is such a cool sci-fi concept that really goes there by the end. And, you know, I could say a half a day. English Teacher was like on my short list for this award.
Yeah,
it's great.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah. I want to give a shout out to Dark Matter. I also ended up really loving the show. And the thesis of that show, which I think is pretty obvious very early on in the show, is that you are the sum of everything that has happened to you, right?
Like,
that like you might think that you want a different life, but the reason you want a different life is because of all the stuff that's happened to you. And like, maybe if you had a different life, you wouldn't want it anymore. You know what I'm saying? Like, because of all the
grass
stuff that
is always
happened
greener
to you in the different life, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's a really powerful idea, especially for people like me and Jeff, who are perpetually dissatisfied with things. So.
the grass is always greener on the other side of the multiverse.
Yes, that's right. That's right. So, great choice, Jeff. I loved Dark Matter as well, and would recommend it. It's on Apple TV Plus. Let's take one last break for a sponsor. We'll be back with more special categories right after this.
This episode of the Filmcast is brought to you by Mando. Mando. Mando is my new deodorant. I've been using it. I got to tell you, I smell better. I feel better. And this is the first deodorant I've ever seen that says use it on your whole body. It's whole body deodorant. Safe to use anywhere on your body. That means your pits. Your nether regions, thigh folds, belly buttons, butt crack, feet, whatever you want. That's what Mondo says to use. And this was created by a doctor who saw firsthand how normal BO was being misdiagnosed and mistreated. It's clinically proven to block odor all day and control odor for up to 72 hours. That's right. I'm using the Mondo stick, just whoop, whoop, anywhere it goes. They got different ways you could apply it. You got your different options. You got the solid deodorant stick formulated and powered by mandelic acid to stop odor before it starts. You got the spray deodorant, which is aluminum free and ideal for those, you know, hard to reach places. All the products are baking soda free and paraben free. You don't want paraben in there or baking soda. And you could choose from a variety of fresh scents like bourbon leather, clover woods, Mount Fuji, or pro sport. I got the pro sport because, as you may well know, I am a professional sportsman. So they said I had to have that one. Clinically proven to control odor better than a shower with soap alone. 12 hours after a shower, the average man's grundle odor level was 5 out of 10. With Mando, the average grundle odor level is 0 out of 10. I don't know if you're up on your grundle odor level, but you want it to be low. 0, ideally. There you go. Mando's got you covered. Mando's starter pack is perfect for new customers. It comes with a solid stick deodorant, cream tube deodorant, two free products of your choice, like mini body wash and deodorant wipes, and free shipping. As a special offer for Filmcast listeners, new customers get $5 off a starter pack with our exclusive code. That equates to over 40% off your starter pack. Use code FILMCAST at shopmando.com. That's shopmando.com. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Smell fresher, stay drier, and boost your confidence from head to toe with Mando.
Okay, folks, time to get to some of the juicier ones. We got the movies they didn't get and the movies we didn't get. So what was the biggest movie they didn't get that we got? Jeff Cannata, I think you and I have the same one here. It's Robert Zemeckis Is Here, right?
Yeah.
This is a movie that Jeff and I both really loved. We were both moved by, and everyone freaking hated this
movie. Yeah.
And Jeff and I think we're both profoundly moved. I was impressed by the fact that they actually came up with a story reason for why the camera is in one location the whole time, right? Because you're like, we're going to tell a story of a house where the camera is in one location the whole time. Well, the only reason that would happen, like, they actually put some thought into why someone would actually stay in one place for their whole life, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what would motivate someone to stay in one place? And, like, that actually feeds into the story. And I appreciate that, like, hey, we're not just, like, doing this for the heck of it. Like, there's actually some motivation here. You really feel the fullness of time and, like, how places can become so important to us in our lives as we move through them. So I really enjoyed this movie, but everyone else I know, everyone I respect, other than Jeff Cannata, of course,
did not like
this movie.
One thing I mentioned, or I didn't get to mention during our whole chat about this, is like, I wasn't a huge fan of Here. I thought like many aspects of it were like genuinely awful. This has happened before, though. Patricia Arquette was in a better movie that was about the passage of time and the way it like leads to regret and thoughts about how you've led your life. And that was Boyhood, which is a movie that I think we should like literally.
I love Boyhood. Boyhood was on my top 10 that year.
That was probably on my most disappointing of that year.
Yes. I'm just saying this because I remember David Chen not being a huge fan of Boyhood.
Not a fan.
And then here's the prepackaged virtualized young Tom Hanks version. It was like, good shit. Says David Chen. I don't know. I don't know about that.
I mean, Boyhood. I think Boyhood is doing something completely different, but is an extraordinary cinematic achievement.
And a great Patricia Arquette performance.
And a great Patricia Arquette performance, a great Ethan Hawke performance. But I don't know. I wouldn't put those in the exact same category. Here's doing a magic trick. And I think, and so is Boyhood, but they're different magic tricks.
Yeah.
The other movie I would put in this they didn't get category that's obvious is Furiosa. It's just like what and Fall Guy for that matter. But like how that's did audiences not find these movies? I don't understand. They're amazing movies.
Right. Devinder Hardwar. The movie they didn't get.
I mean, we've already talked about this, but I think the one I keep coming back to is like you got a great movie in Quiet Place Day One. And a lot of people just did not do that. A lot of people just seem hung up on titles and marketing. And I mean, I'm just like, movies are more than that.
I have to say, you know, I think we give a lot of grace to people to basically how we decide the movies in these categories because it can basically be 100% subjective. That said, A Quiet Place Day One was critically acclaimed and made over $100 million domestically.
That's
so
great.
It's like,
you know who
it's
they
a real
is?
Stretch.
They is you.
It's
they
us.
Is you.
Yeah, it's the two of us.
Okay, yeah. If that's how you want to define it, I accept that. I accept that.
Yes.
But yes. So that's a movie.
And also, I don't like it. It made a lot of money, sure, but even then, like, I don't think a lot of reviews were really getting to what really made it great. You know, there were a lot of like, oh yeah, this is a fun Quiet Place prequel. And I think there are deeper things going on here. I think Matt Zoller's sites got to it, but not everybody did.
It has an 86% Rotten Tomatoes, but Devendra thinks it should have gotten higher than that, which that's
sure.
Fair.
It should have gotten the higher Filmcast score.
Sure. Higher Filmcast score. No doubt about that.
Yeah.
No doubt about that. Okay. What about a movie we didn't get? Devendra Hardwar, a movie everyone thought was awesome, and you were like, I don't understand what the deal of this is.
Well, I mean, you brought this up. Megalopolis kind of, not everybody found Megalopolis awesome, but it has been on top 10 lists.
There have been some defenders of it.
There have been some serious defenders from Megalopolis. I'm like, sure, whatever. The thing that was getting even more praise, though, was The Substance. And I really went into that movie wanting to love it. And I'll tell you, watching that movie just feels like being slapped in the face by some of these themes, like, over and over again. And I appreciate what this movie is trying to do. I appreciate, like, gonzo filmmaking even, but I don't know. Maybe this movie just leans a little too much on it for me. If it took more time to let these things sink in, I think it would work even better for me. But this is a movie that just could not stop, like, hitting you over the head with what it's trying to say.
Yeah.
And after a point, it just could not take it anymore.
Definitely some maximalist filmmaking there.
Pure maximalism.
I will say a movie that I think will be no surprise to anyone. Movie I didn't get, and that would be A Complete Unknown. It is a total out-of-body experience. Like, I just want you to understand, like, imagine watching a movie and you think to yourself, there is nothing of artistic redeeming value in that film, right? And then literally people are putting it on their top 10 lists. People are saying this movie is amazing. It's deep. It's insightful. That is what my experience has been like watching A Complete Unknown, a movie that I think is quite bad and am not a fan of, and yet everyone seems to love. So I don't know anything. This is kind of my conclusion. But yeah, that's my thoughts on A Complete Unknown. One movie that I just didn't get. Jeff Cannata.
Well, I know you hate it when I do multiple movies in these, but I have multiple movies. I'm sorry.
It's all good.
The thing you just explained is how I feel about Trap. Like, I just, like, I fundamentally don't understand how people can enjoy that movie.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Long Legs is on that list for me.
When I say a one for the sickos category, Jeff, these are the movies I'm talking about.
And honestly,
for the weirdos who like this shit.
I feel bad saying this. But I wrote this down before I knew it was your number one movie. I saw The TV Glow.
Not surprised.
I didn't dislike the movie, but it just did not click for me at all.
I mean, listen, there have been some baffling moments this year, Jeff. I keep referencing Borderlands.
I know.
And I keep flashing back to that review where Jeff is like, no, this is fine. I'm like, at what level? At what point did anybody look like they were having fun in this movie?
He is the this is fine dog in Borderlands.
I have one more that I didn't get that nobody has mentioned yet that, like, I saw people, like, shouting from the mountaintops about how great this movie was, and thank goodness they made this movie, and wow, what a the whole franchise has been redeemed. And I, like, do not understand what movie they were watching. And that's Transformers 1.
Oh, really? Right. Yeah, we had a blast. Devendra and I had a blast with that one, movie. And Jeff did not enjoy.
I did not think this movie was good. Everybody in the world seems to have loved it.
My daughter, who's not even a Transformers fan, is, like, really into everything laid out in that movie.
That's what I just feel like I didn't get it. I don't get it. I don't understand what everybody but me saw in this movie.
I mean, I had another one on this list, but it's a one that it's not really, you know, I don't want to pick on this movie too much because it's a smaller film, but All We Imagine Is Light. This is one that is on many critics. I think it won the Palme d'Or at Cannes Film Festival. It was on
my top 10 list.
On your top 10 is number 6. Devendra, number 6. I think this movie is this year's After Sun for me.
Very much that quiet sort of indie
film. It is
film.
Quiet. Yeah. Not much happens. It's glacially paced. It is a movie where I watch it and I think to myself, wow, that was actually kind of a slog to get through. And everyone's watching it and they're like, this is beautiful. It's amazing. I appreciate getting the slice of life from another place, like a group of people that I'd never otherwise would interact with, really. But from a pacing perspective, this movie was punishing, in my opinion.
Really glad to see you just reveal your anti-Indian bias right now, Dave. Thank you for just making it so clear. But no, I hear you. This is one of those slow indie movies, and sometimes I am down for that. Like, it is a very specific vibe. And what this movie is doing is, like, it is just portraying, like, everyday life and how, like, crushing it can be for people and how, like, rigid it can be in certain different societies. But, yeah, I'm not surprised. Not surprised you weren't
into it. Yeah. I think same movie, different pacing. I would actually enjoy it much more. You know, but obviously the pacing is part of what the movie's trying to accomplish.
Pacing of the substance is part of what turned me off of it. So like pacing plays a role.
Important, for sure. All right. So those are big movies they didn't get, big movies we didn't get. What are, you know, the final category, favorite movie of 2025?
I can lay this out for everybody.
Well, first let's hear what Devendra said about what he thought the favorite movie of 2024 would be last year. Here's a clip. I'm playing the harp sound.
You have a pitch. What about a movie? Cassandra Webb is a New York City paramedic who starts to show signs of clairvoyance. I'm talking about Madame Webb, directed by S.J. Clarkson. This movie has everything. It has,
to be in your top 10.
It has Dakota Johnson. It has Sydney Sweeney, Adam Scott. Never in a very bad, cheesy movie, that man. I think we're going to be talking about this movie throughout 2024. That's my bet.
It's bold. That's a Madame bold Webb. Pick.
Do-do-do-do-do-do. We're back in the main show now.
That was a joke. Did you play that whole clip?
You were right. We were talking about that movie.
Did you play the whole clip?
You were correct.
Did I say something after that?
We talked about that movie the whole year.
I think I said something after that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we all chose Furiosa as our number.
Yeah.
And, with Dune Part 2 as also high up on there. On that note, by the way, did Dune not make your top 10, Devendra?
Was not in my top 10. I really liked Dune. As we just said, some movies have gotten all the praise. Like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have room for others. Yeah.
It is remarkable to think that Madame Web came out and then the Sonyverse had a movie that was even worse received than Madame Web. Like, mm-hmm. It was that Madame Web was not the worst received Sonyverse movie that came out this
year. It was the worst Sonyverse movie this year, but then there were also two other not so great ones. So, yeah.
Like, Kraven the Hunter was performed worse at the box office and on CinemaScore.
Nobody was raving for
critically,
Kraven.
I think. Yeah, no one was raving for Kraven. Very unfortunate. Okay. Devendra, best film of 2025. Hit us.
Can I just throw out, I know what you guys are going to pick. We already know what this is going to be.
This, you know, people said this last year and it didn't end well, but go ahead.
Lay it out last year. David Chen, Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning. Jeff Cannata, Superman. And me, 28 years later.
Ooh, look at that.
So,
I'm just going to put this out there, okay? On my, I have it all written down, all the notes written down. Uh-huh. And next to best movie of 2025 is also 28 years later for me. So face, Heart of War. Right.
I think also, Devendra, you're forgetting about a little movie called Avatar Fire and Ash.
I think everyone has forgotten about that. But you
know. Oh, yeah. Is Superman or
is Avatar?
Here's the problem for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Superman, Avatar, and Fantastic Four are all slated for this year.
Yeah.
So that's like a Sophie's Choice for me. We also, by the way, boys, have a new Paul Thomas Anderson movie, a new Yorgos Lanthimos movie, and a new movie from the up-and-coming director we all love by the name of Dan Trachtenberg.
Yeah.
Oh yes.
Yep. So don't worry. Gonna go through all that. But let's just start with best movie of 2025, Devendra Harwar, without revealing too much about what's in the trailer. 28 years later, why is this in your best movie of 2025?
I mean, mainly because I've been dreaming of this forever, like Danny Boyle going back to it, but also like Alex Garland, who is somebody through work, is somebody I've talked to multiple times, and I keep being like, so what about 28 years? Like, so what about 28 weeks later, something, something? What, how do we follow that up? And he kept saying he was interested in the fact that he is joined up back again with Danny Boyle and they're doing something. You've got Aaron Taylor Johnson, you've got Ralph Fiennes. I am very, very intrigued to see what they do with this franchise. It may be absolutely terrible, I don't know, but just in terms of things I'm excited about, of how I don't know how it's going to go down, this is the one I'm most anticipating, I think.
Okay, let me put this out there. All right. So I agree with everything you said, and Danny Boyle, Alex Garland team up, that's very exciting. And
it's been a while since we got one of those.
I thought about putting Mission Impossible in this slot, but Dead Reckoning was such a disappointment.
Okay.
And not only that, but the trailer for Dead Reckoning Part 2, The Final Reckoning,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to say it worries me. Because I will just be very vague about what's in the trailer, but I will say I am very worried that they're going to try to pull something like what they did with James Bond Spectre. Do you remember Spectre and Christoph Waltz was like, "It's me, James, the author of all your pain." And
this
and
has already happened.
They try to like tie. They try to be like everything that happened to you was all part of one big plan. Like I'm worried they're going to go in that direction. And and it was incredibly stupid when they did it in Spectre, and I'm worried that they're going to do something similar with Mission Impossible Final Reckoning. So like I'm still super excited about it. I'm still going to see it, but like between the last movie not living up to my expectations and this movie's trailer being like raising alarm bells in my head, it is not something that I'm going to predict as my favorite movie of 2025. But 28 years later, that has a real shot, I think, at like being a real breakout mainstream hit and also scratching an itch I have for this franchise. And it'll be just nice to see a 28 franchise movie that doesn't look like it was shot on a potato. Because if you go back and watch 28 Days Later, that movie looks real rough.
It looks rough. 28 Weeks Later looks better, but that was still early digital, so it was like not as great as things.
But 28 Days Later, it's like, oh man, like I wish there was like a high def version of that movie because it's such a great film, and you know they used digital cameras of their time that look very very rough today. So I'm excited about 28 Years Later. Jeff Cannata, your anticipated best film of 2025.
I feel like those are two different questions, and I'm always so conflicted because most anticipated doesn't necessarily mean I think it'll be on my top 10 of the year. I think, you know, I think like the Paul Thomas Anderson movie probably has the best chance of that, you know,
I'm fine with giving two separate ones, but I think the spirit of best film of 2025 is what do you think is going to be number one on your list for 2025? That is the spirit of the question.
I mean, like I said, I think the Paul Thomas Anderson movie probably has the best chance. But
Not Avatar? Not Avatar?
I think Avatar, of the three movies I am most anticipating, which is Superman, Fantastic Four, and Avatar.
Yeah.
I think the one that has the best chance of making my list is Avatar. I think Avatar has proven to be movies that just I absolutely adore and feel like triumphs. I want Superman to be great. I want Fantastic Four to be great, but I think there's bigger question marks for me. So I'm going with Avatar, Fire and Ash. If it makes this year,
this will be our number one film of 2025.
If it makes the year, and it's slated for December 19th, right.
We all know that James Cameron has issued some December release dates before that have gotten
could
pushed.
Could not make the year.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go.
So that'll be Avatar, Fire and Ash, and then obviously most anticipated Fantastic Four and the other
Superman.
I gotta say, I'm starting to get like for completely irrational, no good reason at all. I'm starting to get worried about Fantastic Four. Like, I think the fact that it has had so little time in production, it's called Fantastic Four First Steps, which is a terrible name.
Terrible name. Agreed.
I'm just like, I don't know if that's gonna be the game changer that Marvel's looking for. All that said, guys, it's time. So that's kind of the conclusion of the special categories. That's all the special categories for the year. But let's talk about some of the other movies that are coming out in 2025, and just kind of reflect on them. You know, I'm going to go off of Variety's most anticipated films of 2025 here, and take a tour through the year. Okay, here's some highlights for the year coming up in January. Lee Whannell's Wolfman, starring Christopher Abbott.
Good.
Very excited.
Great.
Super psyched for that movie. Mm-hmm. Captain America Brave New World in February.
Worried about that movie.
We'll see. A lot of worries. This movie's been stuck in development reshoot hell for a long time for a variety of reasons. And I have to say, from the glimpses I've seen in the trailer, I don't think it looks very good. So I want Anthony Mackie to have like a fair shake at the Captain America mantle, but I'm worried about this one. Could be pretty rough, but obviously we'll be covering it here on the Filmcast. Paddington in Peru, also coming out in February 2025, should be pretty great. Looking forward to that one. In March, we got the frequently delayed Mickey 17, Bong Joon-ho's latest film. I'm really curious.
Yeah. That looks fun.
Like, but I'm like, what is the deal with this movie? Because
have
it's
you
been
seen
delayed.
The trailer for this one?
No, I haven't.
But genuinely it's been, fun trailer. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's been delayed so many times. It finished shooting in December of 2022.
Wow.
So it really was taken. It was supposed to be theatrically released in March of 2024, and it basically got pushed back an entire year. So like, yeah. I'm just curious, like, what the story is. Is it like studio meddling? Is it that the studio thinks the movie's not good? But it's Bong Joon-ho, obviously super talented director. Anyway, we also got Snow White and Minecraft coming out in March and April of 2025. Not really. I think Snow White actually looks legitimately bad, in my opinion. We actually had a debate, Jeff Cannata, that you were like, this is going to be a massive hit.
And I think it's going to make lots of money.
And I was
money.
Saying, I think it's actually, this is the movie that's actually going to do badly. We'll find out. The Minecraft movie, I actually think looks like one of the worst things I've ever seen.
No hope.
Will also make gobs of money.
Yeah.
It'll make gobs of money. It will. Yeah, go ahead.
It'll be my son's favorite movie of the year and almost everybody's kid's favorite movie of the year.
My daughter's a full Minecraft head and she thinks it looks weird. Because nothing looks like it does in Minecraft. Like they're all like weird CG versions of the Minecraft, like political, you know, cube stuff. So not
she
quite
wants to
good.
See it though, right?
Yeah, she's a little weirded out. Like she thinks it looks strange. I think we skipped over though is Black Bag. Did you hear about that? That's Soderbergh is doing another spy movie with Michael Fassbender and Cate Blanchett. Yes. March 14th.
Yeah.
My understanding is Michael Fassbender only plays spies now.
Only spies.
That's his only. Yeah, he's decided.
Ryan Coogler has a new film in which Michael B. Jordan plays twin brothers in a horror thriller.
I didn't realize they were twins, but yeah, good.
It's called.
Great.
It's called. Do you think they just happened to look alike?
Well, they did. Have you seen the trailer?
No, I haven't. But
it just you just see Michael B. Jordan. If you just see one twin. They'll tell you these are two separate characters. You just think it's one person.
Yeah,
that's
I mean,
a
they
rule,
do have
though.
Different-
that's a. That's a twin's rule. That's a twin's rule. If you ever meet a twin, they have to tell you they're a twin. That's a rule, or else you get into some sort of parent trap situation.
Yeah.
There were no shots of them to have two Michael B. Jordans in that trailer, so it looks cool.
It looks cool. It's coming out in April. Very cool-looking movie. Thunderbolts, coming out in May of 2025. I have no...
No, thank you.
...affection for this, but seeing Florence Pugh in, like, heading up kind of... a Marvel film I'm actually excited about because I think she's awesome.
From the director of Robot and Frank.
Yeah.
As well,
yeah.
Which was a great movie.
This is the problem that Fantastic Four is facing is that there could be two Marvel flops that lead into Fantastic Four.
Right.
And that would be real not good. But I, you know, Captain America Brave, New World and Thunderbolts feel very shaky as far as the Marvel hit machine goes.
This is going to be the real test, I think, of Marvel. Because we had Deadpool and Wolverine, but you could argue that that was kind of an event in a way. It's not really, in my opinion, part of the mainline MCU. These are the opportunities for Marvel to right the ship this year, right? Captain America, Brave New World, Thunderbolts, and Fantastic Four. I think it's high stakes. If two or three of these movies fail, it is... gonna have real implications.
Well, that's the problem is that the first two feel like the biggest. I mean, who knows about people's desire for Fantastic Four?
Yeah, I think Fantastic Four could also fail, you know, like very, very high chance it could fail. So, also in May, Mission Impossible The Final Reckoning, we already discussed that, and the live action Lilo and Stitch movie. This one I do think will make a gajillion dollars.
Yeah.
Unnecessary, but also one that I think will do well. Guys. I gotta say, this was almost. It wasn't my best of 2025, but this is almost like my most anticipated of 2025. Karate Kid Legends.
Yeah, baby.
It's on my list. Yes,
and
so excited for this movie.
And it's because we haven't seen a Jackie Chan movie in a really long time, and also Ralph Macchio is back as Daniel LaRusso
in this
movie.
The franchise in a way. Yeah.
And I gotta say this. I thought the last Karate Kid was actually really decent. The Jaden Smith one. And seeing Jackie Chan in the movie was a delight. So seeing Jackie Chan in another Karate Kid movie
This movie take Cobra Kai as canon?
There's a bit of a controversy because apparently they didn't talk to the Cobra Kai people about this. But Ralph Macchio is in it. The idea is that it's in the shared universe.
This is from
the director of The End of the Effing World, too, which is a series I loved. The trailer looks like a lot of fun. Looks like they're doing a wire work, you know, in a Karate Kid movie, which is more than I expect them to do. So it looks fun. Yeah.
I'm excited for this one. So yeah.
Me too.
In June of 2025, we got Ballerina, the John Wick spinoff with Ana de Armas. That's going to be awesome, I think.
I hope.
Have a blast with that one. And then Pixar has a new movie.
They're going to arm Ana de Armas?
And then Pixar has a movie called Elio coming out in June of 2025. That looks to be interesting as well, along with a live-action version of How to Train Your Dragon. Mm-hmm. This is also when 28 Years Later will come out in June of 2025. And F1, this is a movie that is Apple's biggest push into mainstream filmmaking.
This is the Brad Pitt racing movie, right?
Right.
And the follow-up to Top Gun from the same director.
Joseph Kaczynski, right?
So they're doing the same like high-speed filmmaking. The footage looks great. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's going to be probably has a real chance of being a big success.
Mm-hmm.
In June, we also get Megan 2.0. I don't think any of us really cares about that.
I do. It's great.
July of 2025, Jurassic World Rebirth.
No.
Ay.
Guys, this is the first one of these that's not directed by Colin Trevorrow. Gareth Edwards doing this one. I love...
Well, no. The second one, don't forget, the one we re-reviewed was not directed by Trevorrow either. Yeah. Dominion.
Oh right. Remember? Yeah, you're right about that. Okay.
By an actual good director.
Yeah. Gareth Edwards, I loved his last movie.
Mm-hmm.
Whose name escapes me? The Creator. I think Gareth Edwards is going to return Jurassic Park / World to its former glory. I mean, Dominion was such a horrible movie, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. The one you're thinking of, by the way, is Fallen Kingdom, right?
Fallen Kingdom. Yeah. Good stuff. Yeah.
Why is Scarlett Johansson doing this? I don't know. It's beneath her. It feels
gotta
to
eat,
me.
They got to eat.
It's because the movie is going to be good, Jeff. So that's why she's doing it. Jonathan Bailey, fresh off Wicked. Mm-hmm. Apparently he was making Wicked and Jurassic World at the same time, if I'm not mistaken, which is like really intense for him. Okay, in July, we also got Superman, the new Superman. We already talked about Fantastic Four. In August, untitled Paul Thomas Anderson movie.
Yeah, baby. Mm-hmm. With
Leonardo DiCaprio and Sean Penn.
Yeah, Sean Penn. Dude, that movie's going to be good.
Yep. Freakier Friday, coming on August of 2025.
Kind of wild that's getting made. That's kind of cool.
I agree.
The Lohanissance is on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just excited that my guess is Stephen Tobolowsky is going to be in that one because he was in the first one. So there's a movie called The Bride with Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Directing, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. Christian Bale set to play Frankenstein's monster while Jesse Buckley will portray the bride.
Mm-hmm.
This is literally some of the most talented people alive, in my opinion, making a movie. Probably will be interesting. That's in September of 2025. Any Tron heads in here? Because Tron Ares is coming out in October.
Sure.
I mean, I remain cautiously optimistic that a Tron movie will be good.
I don't know why they keep making these. Like, Tron Legacy was not a massive success. I don't know why. Like, I think this movie is going to be a total failure.
Nothing looks like Tron is the thing, right? And Disney owns this idea of just like really hyperkinetic, you know, the style. So I can see why they want to keep making it work again.
The aesthetic is undeniably cool. Mm-hmm. And they keep hoping that a movie will live up to the aesthetic and none do.
Yeah.
I think we've seen time and time again of studios obsessed with IP and they're like, we have the IP. We got to make a movie out of it. And then they fail horribly. Like we just finished talking about Kraven the Hunter as an example of that. We're like, well, we own it. We might as well use it, you know? And I think this is going to be another example of that. Mark my words, Tron Ares will tank horribly.
It is from the director of Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales, and another Pirates of the Caribbean movie, The Maleficent Mistress of Evil. So
it will do worse than the original Tron Legacy, and people will be like, why did they make this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this movie was almost in my best film of 2020. I really seriously considered putting this in my best film of 2025, and that is Predator Badlands. Like,
yeah, baby.
I really think this has a chance, but also it feels weird because Dan Trachtenberg is a friend, and that would be kind of, I don't know.
it is going to be so awesome.
Yeah. Also, right alongside Edgar Wright's Running Man. So,
yeah. Yeah. Also,
same day. Oh, boy.
Yorgos Lanthimos. I don't think that's going to stay the same, by the way.
Yeah.
I think something's going to move. I don't think Predator Badlands is going to come out across the Running Man. Bugonia, which is a Yorgos Lanthimos movie coming out in November 2025. Very excited about that.
It's described as a science fiction comedy from Yorgos Lanthimos.
Sure.
Let's do it.
Sure.
Indeed. And then Wicked for Good coming out in November of 2025 as well. Who knows what our lives will be like at that point. Finally, you also got Zootopia 2 and Five Nights at Freddy's coming out around the same time. And December of 2025 will conclude with Avatar Fire and Ash, the third film in the Avatar franchise. So a look at 2025. It's going to be packed.
Packed. What a year.
What a year.
Oh my gosh.
There's going to be a ton
of great films. The stuff we know about.
Right. Sundance is in a few weeks, and there's going to be, like, I think three of the movies on my list this year were from Sundance. You know, I didn't know about those movies before when we went in. So, like, a bunch of movies are going to have world premieres in the next 6 months, and we will learn about them.
Guys, well, can you imagine the popcorn buckets we're going to get?
It's going to be incredible. It's going to
be good stuff.
All right. That's it. Any other thoughts about the movies of 2024, 2025, guys? If not, we can wrap it up there, but
I'm good.
Very excited.
Very excited. Thanks for tuning in to this podcast episode. /filmcast@gmail.com is how you can email us. Thefilmcast.com where you can find more episodes. Patreon.com/filmpodcast how you can support us. And for next week, we got a bonus episode about Den of Thieves in anticipation of our main episode about Den of Thieves 2 Pantera. So stay tuned for that. This episode was edited by Noah Ross, who also wrote our weekly plugs music and spoiler bumper. And music for this episode comes from Tim McCune from The Midnight. Check it out. He wrote our theme song. That's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode of The Filmcast. Thanks for listening. I'm David Chen, recording here with Devinder Hardawar and Jeff Kanata. Until next week, until Den of Thieves 1 and 2, we'll see you later.